We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
From Pod World Headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider from Learfield IMG College.
We're back. Time for another edition of the Carolina Insider. And Adam, it's another standalone roadhouse challenge. This time, Bull Durham going through the challenge as we're going to play a little baseball today, Adam. It's a simple game. You hit the ball, you throw the ball, you catch the ball.
The people spoke, we listened, and therefore we were able to spend some time with Kevin, Susan, Tim, and the boys.
That's right. So let's just get right to it. Hope you're having a great summer. We've been a little bit less frequent here recently. We'll get back revved up here soon. But we knew right here before 4th of July, what better way to feel good about things than a little baseball movie? Here we go. Bull Durham in the Roadhouse Challenge.
The Roadhouse Challenge.
J.C. Penney is coming here because of me.
Today.
Get a hit, Crush.
Shut up.
No problem. One, two, three, man. Go ahead, big guy.
Strikeouts are boring. Besides that, they're fascist. Throw some ground ball. It's more democratic.
Camel sticks always make a nice gift.
Look at that. He hit the ball. Gotta get some free steak.
Get out of here. Get him out of the dugout. You know what that makes you. Larry.
Bull Durham in the Roadhouse Challenge today after dominating the voting for the All Sports Roadhouse Challenge. Adam, 1988. Bull Durham came out, and I have to tell you, and I said this before we started recording, it stuns me that this movie was then and not earlier than that. In my mind, this movie was made earlier than that, and just when you put it next to Top Gun, like Top Gun was 1986, but I feel like Top Gun is so much more modern than Bull Durham is.
Bull Durham's going to be a tough one to rate for
me.
Because it definitely feels old.
Yeah, it does feel old.
But I vividly remember when they filmed this. This was a giant deal in the Triangle, and are you going to drive over there and be an extra? You get to be in a movie? Although, at that time, Kevin Costner wasn't as big a deal as we think of him being now, so it wasn't like you get to be in a movie with Kevin Costner, but you get to be in a movie at the DAP. But evidently, I'm now old. Because this movie looks old.
It does look old. So, our three main stars, Kevin Costner as Crash Davis, Kevin Costner was 33 when this movie occurred. He had already been in The Untouchables.
I love The Untouchables. No one should speak ill of The Untouchables.
And if you do, Adam will come and see you personally.
Sean Connery's in that. He's so good.
Adam, this was quite a run by Kevin Costner. So Untouchables 87, Bull Durham 88, Field of Dreams 89, Dances with Wolves 1990, in 91, Robin Hood and JFK, Bodyguard 92, Waterworld 95, Tin Cup 96. That's a pretty good run. And Kevin Costner still doing stuff. I mean, huge stars still today.
Yeah, people say Yellowstone is really good. Do you watch Yellowstone?
No, but he's in it,
right?
He's
the main guy in that, yeah. I'm sure we'll have the Bull Durham versus Field of Dreams conversation. He's not playing that different a guy.
No, he's really not.
One. The Field of Dreams guy is just Crash Davis, who moved to Iowa and married a farm girl.
Tin Cup is just Crash Davis playing golf.
Right. And it's written by the same guy, yeah. Ron Shelton, who also is sort of a big character in this, I guess, because this is what he does. A lot of people strongly don't like Kevin Costner. I don't mind Kevin Costner.
I like Kevin Costner just fine.
Sometimes I get that he tries to be a little more than what he is, but as this guy, as Crash Davis, I like Kevin Costner.
So we've got Kevin Costner, Susan Sarandon playing Annie. Susan Sarandon was 42 when this movie was filmed. Susan Sarandon has been acting forever. She was in a billion things before this and a billion things after this. Although I think outside of Thelma and Louise, I think this is probably one of the biggest things she has been in.
Yes.
She was in Rocky Horror Picture Show, Thelma Louise, Little Women, Stepmom, Shall We Dance? Like, I'm reaching with Shall We Dance with J-Lo and somebody else. So, but I mean, Susan Sarandon still acting to this day as well, and on her little IMDb page or whatever, you can click on, you know, their filmography, and she, by far, of the three main characters in this movie, has done the most in her career. She's a little bit older than Kevin Costner and Tim Robbins, who we'll get to in a second, but she, by far, had done the most.
I think we've had the Susan Sarandon conversation on the air before. I just don't like
her. Adam does not buy Susan Sarandon in this movie.
I don't like her in this movie, and I just don't like her that much. There's just something about her that makes me feel like she always thinks she's smarter than everyone else.
Okay, so here are the long list of other people that I saw reference that to play. First, Crash, Adam. Kurt Russell, Harrison Ford, Mel Gibson, Bruce Willis, Jeff Bridges, Don Johnson, Alec Baldwin, Tom Berenger, Richard Gere, Tommy Lee Jones, Michael Keaton, Sylvester Stallone. All at least considered for the role. For Annie, I have Kim Basinger, Michelle Pfeiffer, Melanie Griffith, Kelly McGillis, and Cybill Shepherd. Now, if you'd have told me Bruce Willis and Cybill Shepherd could have played these two roles, you know those two have chemistry. Thank you, Moonlighting. That would have been on fire.
The studio wanted Kim Basinger.
Yeah.
And Susan...
I mean, come on.
Well, and she wouldn't have had that... There's something Susan Sarandon has that Kim Basinger doesn't. But I could see Kim Basinger doing this better. And I know everyone loves Susan Sarandon doing this. I understand that. To me, I would have believed Kim Basinger in this role more. The studio, Ellen Barkin, they wanted and she passed.
Who's Ellen Barkin?
Well, I think maybe she shouldn't have passed.
I mean, Michelle Pfeiffer, they thought was too young to play the role, but I know... Part of the problem you have with Annie is you think Susan Sarandon's too old for the part.
As you just said, she was 42, Kevin Costner was 33, but they're supposed to be in the same time of life. Like, that's the whole thing, is like they're both coming to this realization together. Well, Susan Sarandon would have come to that realization about 10 years previous, and I think in A-Ball, you've got this 42-year-old hanging around. No offense to 42-year-olds for sure.
Yeah, we love 42-year-olds.
But I think the players would have thought that was just kind of sad, not intriguing. But again, it was a different time.
And your third main character in the three-headed monster, Tim Robbins, who plays Nuke LaLouche, he was 30 years old.
And looks 13.
Yeah. Yeah. He could have passed as 20 years old. Well, that's about what he's supposed to be in this movie. And the only two people I had for other possibilities, Adam, were Charlie Sheen and Anthony Michael Hall.
Which Anthony Michael Hall botched his read. I think he was going to get it and basically came in and he didn't give full effort. And so Ron Shelton got mad at him, and Charlie Sheen was already doing Eight Men Out.
Yep.
Which I like Eight Men Out. I haven't seen it in a while, so it may be old too, but I like Eight Men
Out. And of course did Major League.
The next year. And I think if you have Charlie Sheen as Nuke LaLouche, you never get Wild Thing in Major League because he can't play both.
Yep.
So I think I'd rather probably have Wild Thing.
Yeah. Tim Robbins. By the way, 6'5", Tim Robbins.
He looks enormous in this movie. Yeah. I can tell you that for sure.
So Tim Robbins, of course, had been in Top Gun in 1986. He was Merlin. Jacob's Ladder, 1990. The Player, which I didn't know, but apparently is popular in 92. Of course, I think the defining role for Tim Robbins, Shawshank Redemption in 94. That's got to be number one, right? This is probably number two for him.
Oh, I think Shawshank's number one.
Oh, yeah. Shawshank's number one.
Yeah.
Mystic River in 03.
Which he won an Academy Award for that, I think.
Yes. But, I mean, Tim Robbins doing stuff still today as well. And, of course, Adam, then you have the aspect of Susan Sarandon and Tim Robbins. I don't think they were ever legally married, but were basically together for more than 20 years, although not anymore, after this movie.
And a lot of intrigue about were they together during this movie or not. Like, the people around them all say, oh, we all knew something was going on. And then Tim Robbins and Susan Sarandon say, oh, no, nothing was going on then. It was later. So probably you can put the pieces together. But you can tell they have chemistry.
Adam, anything else as far as scene setters, time of year, anything like that that you want to get to before we talk the movie?
1988 box office.
Ooh.
Bull Durham finished 15th.
Really?
But here's what led the way. These are the top five. Number one, Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
I'm not bad. I'm just drawn that way.
I saw Who Framed Roger Rabbit, disappointed.
Well, I think that's one that seemed awesome in 1988. And by 1998, you're like, ooh, that seems kind of old. And I imagine in 2020, it seems really old.
Yeah.
Coming to America.
Good morning, my neighbors!
Good morning, Vietnam. Mm. Love that one.
Good morning, Vietnam!
Never seen Good Morning, Vietnam.
It's good.
I mean, I know it. I have seen Who Framed Roger Rabbit. I have seen Coming to America. Coming to America was 1988?
Yeah.
Like, that's another one. If I'd have had to guess, I'd have guessed 83.
Yeah. Good Morning, Vietnam be a good Roadhouse challenge. Big.
I wish I were big. Mm.
Seen Big a million times.
See, and if you told me Big and Who Framed or Big and Bull Durham, you have to watch one that you think is more entertaining, I'd go Big.
I'd watch Big.
And Crocodile Dundee 2.
Better than average.
Whoa.
In the top five. Others in the top 10 who you might recognize, Three Men and a Baby.
Wow. Oh, yeah.
Die Hard.
Oh, Die Hard.
Cocktail.
Yeah. Oh, what a year at the movies.
Bull Durham comes in 15th, right behind Scrooged, which is Bill Murray, and I think is kind of an underrated, funny Christmas movie.
Wow. Maybe that can be on our Christmas Roadhouse Challenge list this year.
That'd be a good one. Nuke, based on a real person.
Mm.
Steve Dalkowski.
Yep.
Who Ron Shelton met in the Orioles system. Ted Williams said Steve Dalkowski was the fastest pitcher he had ever faced.
Had problems with alcohol. Steve Dalkowski did that. Is supposedly part of the reason why he never made it to the major leagues.
And unfortunately passed away from COVID-19 in April.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Look at you, Adam.
Yeah. Bull Durham was never number one for any week at the box office. It lost out to Crocodile Dundee 2, Red Heat, which was Arnold Schwarzenegger and John Belushi.
So many of us have lost to Crocodile Dundee 2, though.
And Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Tim Robbins was also offered Eight Men Out, and he had to choose. He chose this one. Good move, both personally and professionally, it seems like. A few other things that we'll get to as we go through. I mean, we talked about Ron Shelton. He is the sports movie guy.
Yep. Former minor league baseball player.
Spent 5 years in the Orioles organization. He also did White Men Can't Jump.
Oh, I didn't know that.
He did Tin Cup. He did Blue Chips. He did Cobb, which is another really good one. And he did the 30 for 30 on Michael Jordan Rides the Bus on his time with the Birmingham Barons.
Wow.
So, again, it's hard to say because I haven't seen White Man Can't Jump in a long time, but I remember that one being more entertaining than this one.
Oh boy, Adam, you're really...
And who knows...
You're really sandbagging Bull Durham
again,
so far.
Well, let me also say, it is entirely possible that White Man Can't Jump may not have aged very well. I think it's possible that in 2020 we might look on it differently than we did in 92 when it came out. I just remember thinking, this is funny. Woody Harrelson, basketball. Ha ha.
Hey,
Wesley Snipes.
You want a quick reference to a recent mention on the pod?
Sure.
Peyton Reed, Ant-Man producer, was a PA for Bull Durham and drove people around in a van.
Wow. Well, when we have him on, which I know we will, ask him about that. The producer, Tom Mount, conveniently enough, he owned the Durham Bulls.
Hmm.
He had bought them for $35,000 in the early 1980s.
He may make some money on that deal.
And he convinced Ron Shelton that Durham would be the place he wanted to do this. Costner was going to do Everybody's All-American, which was the Frank DeFord movie, when he got this script and then decided he wanted to do this. Again, good personal decision and professional decision for him. Grady Little.
Yep.
The future Red Sox manager was the Bulls manager at this time and basically coordinated all the baseball stuff. And throughout the movie, you can see that it appears to be very cold, probably because it was.
Yep.
Because they filmed at the end of the regular season, and everybody wore their parkas until it was time to shoot. And then they would say, all right, jackets off, and then they would do it. And according to Millie, Ron Shelton would have them put ice in their mouth before they talked. Because I guess that keeps the steam from coming out of your mouth. And then they'd spit the ice out and then do their
lines. That would be hard to enunciate if you do that.
Well, that's because you're not a trained professional like Susan Sarandon, who sometimes people slander, but I don't stand for it.
By the way, I mean, there's the clear main three characters in this movie. But also want to mention Trey Wilson, who was the skip. He passed away right after this movie was released, just a couple months afterwards, due to a cerebral hemorrhage. He was only 40 years old.
I thought he was really good.
He was great, and so was Robert Wool. Is that how you say it? He was the pitching coach, Larry, and he is hilarious in this movie.
I thought he was the best of the baseball people.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, he fills in a lot of baseball comedy in this movie, without a doubt.
I think most of the lines I wrote down were probably Robert Wool.
Yeah. Okay, so Adam, I don't have any number or fact to back this up, but I believe this to be true.
I usually don't.
Yeah. So, okay, so the Bulls were a single A team at this point in time. And they were in the Carolina League, and I don't know if the nicknames of the teams were correct.
Yes, they're exactly okay. Right. They're so, all Carolina League teams.
But those were the type of teams that they were playing. They were going to Winston-Salem and Greensboro and all these different places.
Kinston,
the Indians, I definitely know that. I've been to Granger Stadium. Thank you very much. This movie put the Durham Bulls in a whole different place. I mean, they're AAA now, which I'm sure you've been to a Bulls game since they've been AAA, so have I. I mean, there's a big difference between single A and AAA. There's a difference in the money. There's a difference in the facilities. There's a difference in all of it. And this movie is... I mean, the Durham Bulls might be the most recognizable minor league team outside of maybe whoever AAA, like the Paul Tuckett Red Sox, whoever it is, or the Yankees or Cubs or somebody like that. But, I mean, they're right up there because of this movie.
Oh, I think they are the most recognizable minor league team, and I think it is because of this. They were more popular than the movie makes them look. They had the sixth biggest attendance in minor league baseball
really?
The year this was filmed, but... That's the year.
Adam, you are bringing the factual heat today.
But I mean, still, like the way it's depicted is much more how it would have been in, say, Kinston. But it's still very authentic to the Carolina League of 1988. But the Bulls were nowhere close then to what they are now. I mean, without this movie, do they get the fancy new ballpark? Probably not. Or right. If they do, it's something less than what it is. You can go anywhere and see someone wearing a Durham Bulls hat who knows nothing about it other than, oh, Kevin Costner wore this hat. So I think this movie put minor league baseball and the Durham Bulls on the map, because it's right after this that, for example, Bill Murray starts buying minor league teams and owning some teams, and they become an investment and not just something you kind of do in the neighborhood in Kinston or Greensboro.
The Bulls were single A for the Braves at the time. They're now triple A for the Rays. I don't know. I feel like there was another team in between that they were affiliated with. I can't remember, but I feel like that's right. And they've been with the Rays, the triple A for the Rays now for 6-7 years. And again, still extraordinarily popular. They draw well. They've been very good. It just put them in a different place.
Well, and that whole thing with the Braves, was when everything was so regional. Like, you could go watch Chipper Jones play for the Bulls and have him work his way up to the Braves, which was, of course, your favorite team because right. You were from North Carolina and you liked the Braves. And so that whole connection just made sense.
All right, are we ready to get moving?
Yes.
All right. Adam, I did enjoy the very beginning of the movie, old baseball just pictures. And the song A Heaven for You was playing at the time. The music in this movie, not bad, but it did not take a forefront in this movie like, for example, Dirty Dancing. Of course, you would understand why. That makes sense. But I didn't think the movie or the music in this movie was particularly memorable. But I thought this song fit to kind of get you started.
I didn't think there was any iconic music in this movie at all.
No.
No one thing that I thought, ooh, Bull Durham.
Well, I got to tell you, normally with the Roadhouse Challenge, there's normally a recognizable song with each movie. And we use Center Field for this because it was used in this movie and it's baseball related, of course. But I was sitting there before I even started. I thought, what is the Durham, what is the Bull Durham song? Like, I didn't know. I don't think there is one.
Not to me.
We start off with a long monologue by Annie. So Varsity Blues knew what it was doing with a nice little long monologue at the beginning. And you basically learn, Adam, let's just tell it like it is. Annie was a team groupie.
I think that's fair.
I did think her comment of,
I make them feel confident. And they make me feel safe and pretty.
Told you a lot about Annie right there at the beginning.
Yeah, I wonder how that played in 1988 as compared to how it plays now. Like, now I think, I know this is probably not right. I just think she comes across as a little sad. But in 1988, maybe she wasn't.
No, I agree with that. Yeah, like, It's not a very fulfilling life that Annie leads.
As long as it fulfills her, I guess that's all that matters.
Speaking of, it is the pro debut for Eddie Calvin LaLouche. That's Tim Robbins' character. And he is not in the bullpen getting loose, Adam. He is getting loose in a different way in the locker room. And Adam, to that point, this movie was much more adult than I remember it being. The language, the adult situations, there's just a lot of adult material in this movie. And like, and when I say language, like, I think you can anticipate some words that are going to be used in a sports movie, right? There were some words used in this movie that I just was not anticipating.
You talking about like words I would say on the pod?
Right. Yeah. I mean, words you use every day. We all know that. But I was to the point where I had to make sure my kids were nowhere around when I was trying to watch this movie because I couldn't let them hear some of the words.
Yeah. because we know they've never heard that. I wonder if that's kind of some of what I'm missing with this movie, because I didn't see this when it came out. Obvious reasons, I now know.
I honestly am not sure that before this viewing, for this, that I had sat down and seen it from start to finish.
Yeah, I'm not sure I had either.
I mean, I knew what happened. I knew the movie. I've seen parts of it many times, but I'm not sure I've gone start to finish on Bull Durham until this.
Yeah, I knew of pieces, but I don't think I'd seen the whole thing. And I wonder if that's why I don't necessarily have the same feelings for it that I would for, like, Ghostbusters,
right,
where it takes you right back to where you were. And because this was such an adult movie, I wonder if maybe you were 25 when it came out. Maybe that's when you feel differently about it, because you lived this. I didn't live any of this other than it was great to see the old Durham Athletic Park.
One of the things about Bull Durham that I think is cool, being from this area, is you get kind of these references that you understand. And one of them is, it's WRDU Radio, and yeah, Teddy Garland's calling the play-by-play.
And now WRDU Radio presents the voice of the Durham Bulls, Teddy Garland.
The Bulls off to a slow start, having dropped their first three games, but hope to turn it around tonight with the professional debut of talented young pitcher Ebby Cavan-Lelouch.
You learned that Lelouch...
The word on Lelouch here is that a good-looking young pitcher has a major league fastball, but sometimes has problems with his control.
And the very first pitch is so high that it goes into the radio booth.
Which I enjoyed when Teddy Garland responds,
"One ball, no strike to Willie Foster."
He was great in this movie,
yes.
Radio guy.
Yeah.
So you go through the first game. Lelouch walks 18, strikes out 18, both league records. And according to Robert Wool, the pitching coach, Larry,
in addition, he hit the sports writer, the public address announcer, the bull mascot twice, also new league records.
Now, that'd be 126 pitches minimum if he walked everybody on four pitches and struck out everybody on three.
In his pro debut.
So,
let him go.
I feel like Ron Shelton knew better than that particular line.
Also worth mentioning, so they make it clear that Lelouch, I mean, is someone that they call him a bonus baby a couple times. So it is clear that he is someone that the big club, and they never tell you who the big club is, although, again, it's the Braves in real life with the Bulls, but they never specify that in the movie. But that the big club has given this guy a lot of money, and he's just getting started in single A, but that the hope is that he's going to make it to the show.
Of course, at this time, I think it's Robert Wool who says the big club has $100,000 in him. So $100,000 is a lot, which we know Nuke spent some of that money on a Porsche 911.
Yep.
So he didn't put a lot of that bonus in savings.
All right, so first game is over. The manager, Trey Wilson, and Robert Wool are talking in the office, and in comes Crash Davis for the first time.
Who are you? Who's he?
I'm the player to be named later.
He isn't real happy being in single A ball, that he had been in triple A, and it is then explained to him that basically he has been added to the team to help out Lelouch.
Got a $1 million arm, but a 5 cent head.
Had a gun on him tonight. Last five pitches he threw were faster than the first five. He's got the best young arm I've seen in 30 years. You've been around. You're smart. You're professional. We want you to mature the kid. We want you to room with him on the road. Stay on his case all year. He can go all the way.
What an odd couple we're setting up here.
Yeah, that's right. The old grizzled veteran near the end of his career, and the young hotshot who doesn't know what he's doing but has that big arm. These two will certainly get along the entire time. The side character of Max?
Max Patkin.
Yeah.
Clown Prince of Baseball.
I wrote down two things. One, his teeth are wild, Adam. It's like he has no teeth except for his front two.
Yeah.
That's weird. And secondly, did you know this? He's in a deleted scene that didn't make the movie. They killed him in the movie? I didn't know that.
I think it was the right call to take that out.
Yeah, he just kind of, you see him a couple times. It would be like if the Philly Fanatic was a person, like without the costume on, right?
Yeah. Well, and I remember reading a Sports Illustrated story about him, and this just was his life.
Oh, is this a real guy?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know this was a real guy.
Yeah, Max Packin went from minor league park to minor league park, kind of like the San Diego Chicken, but it's a person who does funny things with his face and shoots water up in
the air. We're saying the same thing. I just use fanatic and you use chicken.
But that was his job and livelihood, was going throughout the Sally League and every night a different show, and people thought he was funny and it earned him a spot in the movie. And he was billed like right after the title in the credits, so Ron Shelton thought a lot of him.
Adam, they then go to the bar after the game, and it was filmed in Mitch's Tavern, which is, I guess, still around, on Hillsborough Street, right off NC State's campus in Raleigh.
You couldn't find a bar in Durham?
I guess not. Maybe they were staying in Raleigh. And this is where a couple things happen. Crash and Nuke meet each other for the first time, and they meet each other in a dispute about Annie, which is Susan Sarandon. They both have caught the eye of Annie, and Annie has caught their eye, and so they both are interested in her, and they end up getting a little disagreement about it. Now, two things about this. You probably saw this. Nuke is dancing with all the ladies in the bar. Did you see who choreographed that dance? Paula Abdul.
Yeah.
And she thought she was doing it with the promise of having a line in the movie, but they're like, no, that wasn't the agreement at all. And so she got mad and just left.
What an odd room that must have been.
All of it's weird.
Well, yeah. But I mean, Paula Abdul in 1988, that's pretty prime Paula Abdul.
I would think so.
This movie didn't have a giant budget, but you're going to spend a sizable amount of it flying Paula Abdul to Durham to choreograph this one tiny scene with Tim Robbins, and you don't communicate with her well enough to know that whether she's speaking or not? It all seems very odd, but everyone definitely agrees Paula Abdul was there.
Straight up released November 22nd, 1988. So maybe she wasn't quite there yet.
Yeah, she was right on the verge of breaking out. Because, yeah, you're right. Forever Your Girl comes out in 88, sells 7 million copies. Whew, a lot of good ones. Straight Up. Straight Up, now tell me, do you really want to love me forever? Oh, oh, oh. Forever Your Girl. Cold-hearted. And Opposites Attract. It ain't fiction, just a natural fact. We got together for opposites attract. Wasn't that the one that had MC Scat Cat?
Yeah. Yeah, it did.
We're going to randomly put a cartoon cat in our video and he's going to rap.
Yeah.
That was 1988.
Hey. Roger Rabbit was ruling the box office, so why not have a cartoon cat?
Who raps? MC Cat on the rap, so mic it. Here's a little story, and you're sure to like it.
Swift and sly, and I'm playing it cool with my homegirl, Paula. I did enjoy it. So basically, for the first time, which happens a couple times, Nuke is hot-headed and just wants to fight Crash Davis. And so he says,
"You coming or not, old boy?"
I like that line. As he tries to call him outside to go fight. So they go outside. They're going to fight. Kevin Costner, though, doesn't want to fight. Tosses him a ball and basically says,
"Hit me in the chest with that."
Because, of course, Kevin Costner would carry a baseball in his members-only jacket to the bar.
Big time pleated pants feel for Kevin Costner in this movie.
A lot of pleats in this movie.
Yeah. He also calls him Meat for the first time, which he calls him throughout the movie. Kevin Costner calls Tim Robbins that throughout the movie. And so, of course, he finally goads Lelouch into trying to throw the ball at him, and he misses ridiculously.
"I'm Crash Davis. I'm your new catcher, and you just got lesson number one. Don't think. Can only hurt the ball club."
Who were all the people cheering on Nuke?
I think it was the other Bulls, because they didn't know that Crash Davis was on their team yet, because it was the night after the game. Crash Davis had just come when the game was over to, like, talk to the manager, and then he went out with the guys, but I don't think they knew he was on the team yet.
And Nuke had already made all these friends? He's just got this gregarious personality?
Look, this dude just struck out 18.
And walked
18.
Yeah, it could be.
So, Adam, Annie ends up inviting them both to her house. Classy move. Classy. That's another thing about Annie is I feel like they're trying to make you think that she's super classy and cultured and all this.
She definitely quotes a lot of famous authors.
Yes. Okay, so basically she then lays down the law of she picks one player every year to be her boyfriend, Adam. And then that's it. One player is her boyfriend every single season, and then the next season it's somebody new. And you quickly learned that Kevin Costner, Adam, he challenges Annie, both mentally, and she's attracted to him, but he's not going to play these games. Meanwhile, Lelouch is pretty dumb and has on his mind what a lot of 20-ish-year-old dudes have on their mind.
The slider.
Yes. Not real nuanced. He wants the fastball. And then you get I think the main part of this movie is Kevin Costner giving these dramatic speeches. Most of the time, they're in some way about baseball. This particular one isn't necessarily, but baseball is included, and that's the what do you believe in speech.
Which I don't recall being as profane as it is in real life.
Exactly. We'll play it for you, but I can't play it all.
What do you believe in then?
Well, I believe in the soul. The small of a woman's back, the hanging curveball, high fiber, good scotch, that the novels of Susan Sontag are self-indulgent, overrated crap. I believe Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. I believe there ought to be a constitutional amendment outlawing AstroTurf and the designated hitter. I believe in the sweet spot, softcore pornography, opening your presents Christmas morning rather than Christmas Eve, and I believe in long, slow, deep, soft, wet kisses that last 3 days.
It's like, look, there's some dirty words out there, right? Like, if you had to rank dirty words on a scale of, like, 1 to 10, like, Adam will even let, like, a 7 dirty word let out on the pod. Adam, these were 10. These are in the 10. The 10. I give it a 10. The words that we're throwing out in this speech are on the 10 level.
Yes. Wasn't expecting that.
It would get you thrown out of the game, as we'll learn in a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
So basically, it comes down to Kevin Costner's not messing around. He's not going to play these games with Annie. So she's going to be with Nuke. Some other stuff happens that we can't talk about. You go back to the locker room, and you get the shower shoes scene, which I think is a decently well-known scene where Kevin Costner holds up Lelouch's shower shoes and they're all covered in fungus, and he talks about how he can have those in the show, but not to have it just makes him a slob when you're in minor league.
Your shower shoes have fungus on them. You'll never make it to the bigs with fungus on your shower shoes. Think classy, you'll be classy. If you win 20 in the show, you can let the fungus grow back on your shower shoes and the press will think you're colorful. Until you win 20 in the show, however, means you're a slob.
A good life lesson.
Yeah. Then you go to some game action, get a Northgate Mall reference over the PA system.
Y'all don't forget, Saturday is Bull Day down at the Northgate Mall.
Which, again, is another one of those little, I think, touches of this movie that makes it popular here, is that most people, even though Northgate Mall doesn't exist anymore, that you go, oh yeah, Northgate Mall.
It does in my heart.
Yeah.
And no one really ever mentions that the Bulls have a female PA announcer, which would have been huge in 1988.
Yeah, very progressive.
Good work by the Bulls.
Well, they have a lot of women. Yeah, Annie apparently is the official scorekeeper, maybe?
Or certainly some sort of advanced scout. Maybe she's in the analytics department.
Yeah, plus there's Millie, who's...
I think she might be an intern.
Millie is kind of like a younger version of Annie, but not as nuanced. She's really there just for the fastball, too. You get a Crash at bat where he's got the inner monologue going on. I did enjoy this, and he ends up striking out, but it's an interesting sequence where kind of what's going through his head before every pitch.
You're thinking too much, Crash. You're thinking too much. Get out of your head. Don't let him in your kitchen. All right, here we go now. Stay back. Relax. Quick bat. Quick bat. Quick.
Foul!
And you get the what I did not know but learned was the improvised line of...
Get a hit, Crash.
Shut up.
Which I bet killed in 1988 because you're 5 years removed from The Natural.
Right.
And Bobby the Bat Boy, like, basically propelling Robert Redford onto these great heights. So I'm sure this, people were like, ah, that's some reality right there.
You learn that Crash is really close to the minor league home run record. And Annie knows this because she is super into minor league baseball. So she knows this, and he knows this, but nobody else seems to be super aware of it. And his point, Adam, is it's a little bit of a dubious honor because it means he's been in the minor league so long that he's a very good minor league player, but had never been able to take that next step to the pros, to the show, past the 21-day stint, which we'll learn about.
I looked up your records.
You what?
Mm-hmm. You hit 227 home runs in the minors. That's not bad.
Don't tell anybody.
Why not? You hit 20 more this year, you're going to be the all-time minor league champ. The record's 246.
Well, 247 home runs in the minor leagues would be a kind of dubious honor.
I liked how Annie's entire reason for justification of this award is the sporting news should know about.
Yeah.
Like, that's the pinnacle.
Mike DeCourcy needs to come and write about this.
I think it would be great. The sporting news should know about it.
No. Please.
Nothing could ever be a higher honor than to be mentioned in the pages of the sporting news.
You get a quick scene of Millie, who we mentioned a moment ago, which I did enjoy the line. She's going,
hi, 18. Hi, 12.
And then she finds somebody who she hasn't talked to before, apparently, and she goes,
hey, I'm Millie.
I'm married.
You get, one of many, like, this is baseball scenes where you have the guy rubbing the chicken bone on his bat.
What is that?
Chicken bone cross. Takes the curse off the bat that brings me hits.
Pre-Jobu in Major League.
That's right. It's Eastern Seaboard Tobacco Growers City Council Little League Cash Drop Day. A helicopter comes to the field and just drops $1,000 bills and a bunch of kids run out and try to pick them up.
You're very dependent on the wind for that promotion not turning into a fiasco.
Well, the helicopter itself just blows the money all over the place.
Yeah.
That's a poor execution of the event.
I think you've got to have some sort of barriers on the field to contain the money so that the kids can get it, because I think if I'm sitting in the stands, I got a fair chance of getting a few $1 bills.
Hey, guys, it's Jones. Word about the halfway point of this Roadhouse Challenge. Hope you're enjoying our review of Bull Durham. Wanted to give a quick thank you to our sponsors, including the Atma Hotel Group, new owners of Sheridan Chapel Hill and Courtyard by Marriott Chapel Hill, the UNC Alumni Association. You can learn more at alumni.unc.edu. Our friends at UNC Healthcare, of course, dedicated to caring for champions of all kinds and help keeping you in the game and at your very best. unchealthcare.org/sports. And LS Tractor, what is it about for you? Learn more at lstractorusa.com. Also fitting with Bull Durham being in the Roadhouse Challenge that it's time to warm up your shoulder because it's Thursday, and on Thursdays, we throw the ball. All right, let's get back to it. Bull Durham in the Roadhouse Challenge.
Roadhouse.
So you get a couple of famous scenes here coming up, Adam. One, Nuke is pitching. Crash is his catcher. I don't know if we mentioned that. Crash is the catcher. And so you get his famous speech about strikeouts being fascist and that ground balls are more democratic.
Relax. All right, don't try to strike everybody out. Strikeouts are boring. Besides that, they're fascist. Throw some ground balls. It's more democratic.
Nuke shakes off some pitches that Crash tries to give him, so Crash tips off the batter on what the next pitch is going to be, so it hits a bomb.
Hey! Why are you shaking me off? Huh?
I want to bring the heater to announce my presence with authority.
To announce your what?
To announce my presence with authority.
To announce your presence with authority? This guy's a first ball fastball hitter. He's looking for heat.
Oh, yeah? So what? He ain't seen my heat.
All right, me. Give him your heat.
And you get the first shot of the hit bull win stake sign on the home run that Crash tips off the pitch. The batter hits the bull.
Well, he really hit the shit out of that one, didn't he? Just look at that. He hit the bull. Guy gets a free steak. You having fun yet?
Oh, yeah. I'm having a blast. Thanks.
Good.
God, sucker teed off on that like he knew I was going to throw a fastball.
He did know.
How?
I told him.
And that sign, which is very famous and still around, was created for the movie. It was not part of the Durham Bulls before the movie, and now it is. Now it's over the big blue monster there in left field.
I had forgotten that they didn't have that sign before the movie, because I totally think of that as being part of the Bulls, but it, as you said, it was not until the movie.
They've added the hit grass, win salad part, too, now. Where do you get the steak from? Do you know? Because, I think that's legit.
I think so, but I don't know.
You also get, which is kind of a running theme in this movie, of Nuke LaLoosh needs to get out of his own head, that he thinks too much. And he, at one point, says, don't think, just throw. Throws a beautiful strike, and as soon as he does that, says,
God, that was beautiful. What'd I do?
So it shows you kind of this problem that he's having of he clearly has all the talent, but he gets in his own way sometimes from the baseball side of things.
Don't think, it can only hurt the ball club.
Yep. So they end up losing big to Fayetteville in the game that they're showing that LaLoosh is pitching. And Adam, then you get another one of the more famous scenes in this movie where the manager says, oh, they're not any good, and he doesn't know. He's tried to be nice to him, and he doesn't understand why he's not getting through to the kids. And Crash Davis tells him to go scare him, and you get the famous shower scene where the lollygags.
You guys, you lollygag the ball around the infield. You lollygag your way down to first. You lollygag in and out of the dugout. Did you know what that makes you? Larry?
Lollygaggers.
Lollygaggers. What's our record, Larry?
8-16.
8-16. How'd we ever win 8?
It's a miracle.
It's a miracle. This is a simple game. You throw the ball. You hit the ball. You catch the ball. You got it?
You lollygagged it first. It is great. It's a great scene.
That's one of the times I actually laughed out loud in this movie. The lollygag scene. I thought that was good.
Again, Trey Wilson, who played the skip, I thought he was excellent in this movie.
Yes.
He was terrific. You also see him have to cut a player and just trying to lay the groundwork for later in the movie. Bulls are about to head on a 12-day road trip, and not important part of the movie, but I think part of the movie that is played up a lot, Annie gives her garters to Nuke and tells him to wear them while he's pitching. The rose goes in the front, big guy.
That was another time that I laughed out loud. That's two in a very short time span.
So they're on the bus, and Adam, it's time for another dramatic Crash speech, where he talks about how he made it to the show for 21 days and how awesome it is in the majors. He proclaims that Nuke has a gift, but he doesn't respect the game. And Adam, that's the core conflict between Nuke and Crash. Nuke is not wise or worldly or educated of the game, but he has this talent that he just has, whereas Crash Davis is done all that he's gotten everything out of his talent to reach the level of success that he's had, but he's reached his ceiling and you can tell that the ability for Nuke to be more successful than Crash bothers him because he doesn't feel like Nuke loves the game or baseball as much as he does.
How come you don't like me?
You don't respect yourself, which is your problem. But you don't respect the game, and that's my problem. You got a gift.
What do I got?
You got a gift. When you were a baby, the gods reached down and turned your right arm into a thunderbolt. You got a Hall of Fame arm, but you're pissing it away.
I ain't pissing nothing away. I got a Porsche already. I got a 911 with a quadraphonic Blaupunkt.
Christ, you don't need a quadraphonic Blaupunkt. What you need is a curveball. Huh? In the show, everybody can hit a fastball.
Well, how would you know? You've been in the majors?
Yeah, I've been in the majors.
Yeah? Where were you?
You've been in the show, man? Yeah, I was in the show. I was in the show for 21 days once. 21 greatest days of my life.
And I think these bus conversations are part of what people liked about the movie, because in 1988, we hadn't seen this type of stuff where a team's together off the field. You saw the team on the field, and that was it, and they played the game, and that was it. But now you're getting to see them interact away from the field, and it feels like the way they're talking is pretty authentic, and I think that's what people liked.
Well, I think they did a good job with that in this movie, and I think that's also part of why this movie is so popular. And because if you love baseball, I think you love this movie. And again, I think some of it's the age range, too, to your point. Because I know you love baseball, but I'm not sure you love this movie. But I think that it is, it's that kind of, they're saying things that you feel and believe about the game. And I think particularly Crash Davis and all these dramatic speeches about how baseball's bigger than just baseball and the show and all this stuff, I think plays into that.
Yeah, everything you just said is right, but I feel like when Kevin Costner says those exact same things in Field of Dreams, I believe them more than I do when he says them here.
Mm. All right, so you get a montage of all the games on the road trip, including, again, another pretty famous scene, Adam, where you have the radio play-by-play in which they aren't actually seeing the game. And so, you know, a woman holds up a sign that says double to left, and then he claps the wood together and presses a button on his soundboard that plays the crowd cheering for the opposing crowd. And you also learn that this is, quote,
"It's time to tell it like it is, sports fans, and this is the most wretched road trip I've seen in 20 years, and possibly the worst Durham team in half century. Is the modern-day athlete a pale imitation of the great old Warriors? Only Crash Davis stands out this year. Begging the question, what are these boys thinking about? Because it sure ain't baseball."
Another pretty famous scene in this movie. I keep saying that, but I do think there are some individually very famous scenes or famous speeches in this movie. And it's the rainout scene where basically the team's tired. You know, you've been on this long road trip and they're saying, gosh, you know, we just need a day off. And Kevin Costner bets his teammates that he can get them a rainout, even though the weather's not supposed to be rainy. And then you see them all. This was a very boys being boys scene. I mean, down to the point of very much like Varsity Blues. You're carrying around the six-pack of beer, you know, by the plastic holding of it, and Kevin Costner and Nuke and two other players break into whatever opposing stadium they're supposed to play in the next day and, of course, turn on the sprinklers and just make a mess of the field. Again, a very well-known scene in this movie.
Oh, my goodness. We got ourselves a natural disaster.
Based on some of Ron Shelton's actual experience in his minor league days.
So this is when Nuke, who hasn't put the garter on yet to pitch, finally does. Kevin Costner catches him putting it on, and that's when he gives him the
rose goes in the front, big guy.
Adam, then all of a sudden Nuke starts pitching a little bit better. Things start getting, he and Crash, their relationship, it's getting a little bit better. Nuke's out of his own head some, and he starts pitching well after he's got the garters on. And he did fire one. I thought it was a funny line where he fired one in there, and he's like, that's a humdinger.
That was funny.
Ooh, that was a humdinger.
In one of these action scenes again, Crash says that he's going to hit a home run on a breaking ball if the pitcher throws him a breaking ball on the first pitch of the inning. He does. I thought that was funny when he's running down first baseline. He slaps his hands to his cheeks like he's super surprised. Nuke is pitching well. Radio announcer says,
"Second start by LaLouche. He's thrown 5 outs on 9 pitches, all of them strikes. He's got pinpoint control here tonight, Bull fan."
And then that's when Crash goes out and tells him to hit the bull on purpose in the head. I think another well-known scene where he fires the pitch and it hits the bull in the head, and it's funny. And the bull mascot falls down.
"I want you to throw the next one at the mascot."
"Why? I'm finally throwing it where I want to throw it."
"Just throw it at the bull, right? Trust me."
As we talk about it, I feel like there's more things in here I liked than I thought.
Well, I do think there are just a lot of individual things about this movie that are really, really well known in the sports movie genre and are repeated a lot. And so basically Crash did that to get in the batter's head, then, you know, said, "Oh, I don't know where it's going." So Nuke's having his best game for the team, but shakes off another pitch in the ninth. Crash tips off the batter again, and Nuke ends up giving up bomb, which again just shows that he's trying to get him to kind of give up control, just use his physical talent and pitch.
Why do you think we had to have Crash tell him twice what pitch was coming?
Just to show you that while he's getting better, he still hadn't quite gotten there yet. That he's still, it's showing his growth, Adam, of his, he's still got a little bit of the young cocky pitcher in his mind.
And Crash just has to keep a firm hand on this young stallion.
Yep, exactly. Speaking of young stallion, Adam, the Bulls are on a winning streak. Nuke thinks part of the reason why is that he has now become celibate with Annie. No more take his breath away scenes for Nuke. Crash then teaches Nuke all these cliches on how to talk to the media and basically convinces him to remain celibate with Annie because you never mess with a winning streak.
"You're going to have to learn your cliches. You're going to have to study them. You're going to have to know them. They're your friends. Write this down. We got to play them one day at a time."
"It's pretty boring, you
know." "Of course it's boring. That's the point. Write it down. How's Annie?"
"I'm figuring I'm just going to cave in and sleep with her, you know, calm her down."
"Look, are you out of your mind?"
"Well, I'm just
you out of your mind?
I'm just talking about one time.
If you give in now, you might start losing. Huh? Never f*** with a winning streak."
This was one of Crash's speeches that I liked, because he says, if you believe you're playing well because of whatever, then you are, which I think almost everyone who plays baseball believes.
Also, it's important to know that you have this ongoing tension between Crash and Annie, even though he is fully aware and understands that she is, quote unquote, with Nuke during this season. But you can tell that there's something brewing between those two. So when he tells Nuke to remain celibate, there may be some ulterior motives there, Adam. Then you get, I think, Adam, the most famous scene in the movie, which is Nuke is pitching again. His dad is at the game, so he's struggling a little bit because he's nervous because his dad's there, and they end up with the big meeting on the mound. And it starts off with just Nuke and Crash, but then everybody starts coming to the mound. And it's just, I think, the most well-known scene, because that's when Robert Wool comes out to see what's going on, and Crash Davis explains all the funny things that they're actually talking about when you might think that they're talking about baseball.
"Excuse me, what the hell's going on out here?"
"Well, Nuke's scared because his eyelids are jammed and his old man's here. We need a live, rooster? We need a live rooster to take the curse off Jose's glove, and nobody seems to know what to get Millie or Jimmy for their wedding present. Is that about right?"
"That's right.
We're dealing with a lot of
Okay, well, candlesticks always make a nice gift, and maybe we can find out where she's registered, maybe a place setting or maybe a silverware pattern. Okay, let's get to it. Here we go."
Robert Wool ad-libbed his part. They had done several takes before, and Ron Shelton told him, "All right, now do one for you." And so that's what he came up with. To me, the funniest part is Robert Wool says all these things and then ends it with, "Okay, let's get two."
I wrote that down too. Yeah. Robert Wool is great in this movie. And, you know, there'll just be random shots of him in the dugout just doing baseball stuff, you know. And you and I have both been around baseball enough, you more than me, but we've both been around baseball enough to know that this is real. That there is always guys like that who are just over there chattering nonstop.
No problem, baby. Go get him, 1, 2, 3, baby. Go get him, big guy. Okay, just stop pacing, baby. Get close, baby. You got it, baby. One more, baby. You got it. Come on, new kid, man. No problem. Chuck Hockey. You got it, baby. Come on, new jumper, they got super rook. Show me a super rook. Super new. La Luce.
He nailed it.
Yes. So the Bulls finally lose. Winning streak's over. Crash got tossed in the game.
He got a long rope before that ejection.
He got an incredibly long rope before the ejection, yes. The umpire gave him plenty of wiggle room to walk back his comments.
He respected the veteran enough to let him get his frustrations out, but then we went past frustrations onto several other things.
Yeah, we would give you the audio of that exchange, but it's a level 10 naughty word.
I did enjoy that Annie and Millie were listening to the game on the radio, and the announcer says something to the effect of, well, he said a word that you can't say to umpires, and Millie immediately goes, oh, he must have called him a...
Yeah, exactly. So Nuke goes to see Annie, brings his dad with him, and while he's there, gets the phone call that he's been called up to the show. So Annie dumps him.
From A-ball to the majors.
Yeah. After a game in which he pitched very poorly.
Right.
But, Adam, it's near the end of the year. They've expanded the rosters. That's how they explain it to you. Mm-hmm. So he goes to tell Crash, who's back at the bar, and Crash is both overserved with alcohol and I think a little sad, Adam.
I think that's his character in the entire movie.
Yeah. There is a sneaky lot of drinking by Crash Davis in this movie.
Yes.
If he is not on the field playing, he either has a beer or a whiskey in his hand at almost every period of time.
He drank a beer in the shower at the field after he got kicked out of the game.
Yeah. Newt goes to tell Crash. Crash really isn't very happy about it, quite honestly, Adam. And that's when you get another dramatic Crash speech about the difference between hitting 250 and 300 in the show.
What the difference between hitting 250 and 300 is? It's 25 hits. 25 hits and 500 at-bats is 50 points, okay? There's 6 months in a season. That's about 25 weeks. That means if you get just one extra flare a week, just one, a gork, you get a ground ball, you get a ground ball with eyes. You get a dying quail. Just one more dying quail a week, and you're in Yankee Stadium.
One dying quail.
Yeah, just one a week. One ground ball with eyes.
That was funny the way he said it that way. Like, why did he do his like crazy announcer voice for that one little piece? Because he's being Kevin Costner for the rest of the speech, yeah. But then he gives you the one ground ball with eyes. like he's in the stands at the Durham Athletic Park keeping score on his scorecard.
So Crash eventually goads Nuke into hitting him because he was just kind of being a jerk, quite honestly. And Nuke had enough. And then, oh, but crafty veteran Crash Davis, Adam, brought it back and told Nuke that he did a good job. Somewhere Brian Taylor's nodding his head because Nuke hit him with his non-throwing hand when he punched him.
Well, did you hit me with your right hand? Did you hit me with your left? Hon, did you hit me with your right hand? Did you hit me with your left?
My left.
Good. It's good. Well, you get in a fight with a drunk, you don't hit him with your pitching hand.
Brian Taylor is a great reference.
How about a callback right there?
I would like to know how many people got that.
Well, if you don't know, so Brian Taylor was this... Was he the number one overall pick?
Yes.
By the Yankees, yep. Out of...
East Carteret High School.
I was going to say either East or West Carteret High School. And that is in extreme eastern... I mean, that is like the beach area of North Carolina. And so, as you can imagine, not necessarily a giant hotbed for guys who are going to the pros or going to be drafted number one. Just the density of the population isn't there, and it's not like a big city or anything. And so Brian Taylor is drafted number one by the Yankees, of all people, gets a huge amount of money, but never amounted to anything. And the big negative was that he got in a fight in a bar and punched the guy with his throwing hand and broke his hand and never was the same.
1991 Major League Draft was when he was picked. It was after two seasons in the minors that he got in the fight. He retired in 2000 and never played above AA.
Wow.
And he's one of three players to be drafted first overall and never play in the major leagues.
Mm.
The story is not as positive post-baseball.
Yeah. Yeah.
It wasn't really that positive in baseball yeah. Now that I think about
yeah.
it.
Yeah. That should tell you how much less positive it was out of baseball. So Crash goes, Nuke is packing up to leave the next day. Crash goes to apologize for being a jerky jerk the night before and get another nice Crash speech about how important baseball is.
Look, Nuke, these big league hitters are going to light you up like a pinball machine for a while, right? Don't worry about it. You be cocky and arrogant even when you're getting beat. It's a secret. You got to play this game with fear and arrogance.
Dramatic baseball speeches, Adam. Bull Durham has plenty of those.
Yes.
How important baseball is.
To our lives and our livelihoods.
Yes. A wedding scene, we failed to tell you. So Millie, who again was like the miniature, the younger version of Annie, but not as nuanced, ends up marrying a guy named Jimmy, who you meet couple times during the film, who is very religious. And so they are extraordinary opposites. But Adam, as our friend and choreographer of Bull Durham, Paul Abdul, has told us, opposites attract.
I didn't understand why we needed that scene.
Well, and you probably know this. The extras for that scene, they actually came to Chapel Hill. There had been a Pink Floyd concert in Chapel Hill. And this is a scene.
At the Smith Center.
Yeah, in the Smith Center. And so this had been a scene that was filmed late in the production of the movie. And so their budget was running low, but they needed extras for this scene. So they came to the Pink Floyd concert and was like, hey, now the concert's over. You want to come over to Durham? You can be an extra in a movie. And so a lot of the people in the stands are people who left the Smith Center and a Pink Floyd concert to go be a part of Bull Durham.
That's a better story than I thought the scene was.
Yeah, it was a very quick scene. Yeah, that's a lot to go into it.
For nothing. There's right. No payoff, I don't think, other than, hey, look, opposites always attract, except for Annie and Crash, who are actually very similar,
yeah.
Which is the whole theme of the movie.
Crash gets cut. You find out that so the scene earlier in the film where the manager has to cut Bobby kind of laid the groundwork for this, because he goes through the exact same kind of speech and motions with Crash, so you know what's coming.
Yes, Skip. When you want to see me?
Crash, shut the door. This is the toughest job a manager has. But organization wants to make a change. Now that Nuke's gone, they want to bring up some young catcher. I put in a word for you with the organization. Told them I thought you might make a fine minor league manager someday. Might be an opening at Visalia next year. Had a hell of a year, Crash. You know how it is.
Well, you can imagine how Crash reacts to this, goes to the bar, and then decides to go see Annie. And Adam, I think it's the single longest take my breath away scene, certainly in Roadhouse Challenge history and maybe in movie history.
Well, even right before that, I thought sad Crash walking through Durham while saxophone plays, that montage put an extra Roadhouse on my Roadhouse grade. That was as 80s as it gets. Crash is sad. It's very dark. There's a saxophone solo. And he's walking around with his hands in his pockets. This is sad in 1988.
He's got plenty of room in those pockets, thanks to the pleats.
Well, and also,
I gotta say, very breathable fabric that his pants. it was like It was like some kind of cloth almost, these pants.
Wasn't quite linen.
Yeah, but close. It was close.
It was in the ballpark.
Yeah.
And we know his jacket had plenty of room because he kept all his baseballs in there.
Yeah. I mean, Adam, this Take My Breath Away scene.
Enough about fashion.
Yeah. Bed, check. Floor, check. Tub, check. Kitchen, check. The house where Annie lived is for sale, but I got to tell you, I don't know if I want to move into it. It's been a little bit sullied.
I think it's been deep cleaned since then. 911 North Mangum Street in Durham, known as either the James Manning House or the Bull Durham House, currently for sale for $1,150,000. It's online. You can look through it. It's very nice on the inside.
Adam, we're almost done with the movie. This movie, we're almost finished. So, Crash, even with this scene with Annie, which, by the way, 60 Minute Man played the entire time. And I got to say, two things about 60 Minute Man. Great song. Very, very dirty song. 50 minutes of blowing my top. Although, you go back and listen to some of these songs from like the 50s and the 60s that probably your parents and my parents consider like their music. These songs are a little, they're PG-13 at best, Adam.
I'm not sure some of them are appropriate.
I'm not sure I would want my kids listening to those tunes.
And did you see that young man Elvis on television swiveling his hips about?
He was gyrating all over the place.
They need to only show him from the waist up.
I am going to send a handwritten letter to the Ed Sullivan Show. Next thing you know, these Beatles are going to become popular. So Crash, despite what we can only assume was an enjoyable evening with Annie, leaves the next morning, leaves with a note, because he can't get the baseball itch scratched just yet, Adam.
All the other itches are scratching.
So he has heard that they need a catcher, the Asheville Tourist in the something league.
Are they in the Sally League?
No, something with an S. I can't remember.
South Atlantic League? Yes.
I think it was South Atlantic League.
Which those in the know call the Sally League.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know.
South Atlantic League, SAL.
Okay. Yes, Adam, it was the Sally League, as I always say. So, Adam, I have a question real fast. We've been to McCormick Field, right?
Yeah, we have. We did a game.
The Tar Heels played UNC Asheville in McCormick Field. That's the one that had the right field. It was like 250 feet or something really short.
Yes, which was cool.
And well, I mean, even to the point where like they show an outside shot of McCormick Field and somebody walking or something, I was like, wait a second. I think I've been there before.
Yes, and I thought it was cool that the movie shot it actually at McCormick Field. I
mean, yeah,
you could say he was going to Asheville and film it in Greensboro. You pass right by there to get to Asheville, but they went all the way to Asheville and did it, and I like that. I like seeing McCormick Field.
So Crash ends up with Asheville hitting the home run to break the minor league record for career home runs, although, as Annie is telling us in a voiceover, really did it to no fanfare, including that Sporting News didn't say a peep about it.
The Asheville second baseman, the opposing second baseman kind of kicks the dirt when Crash hits the homer. A UNC Asheville baseball player named Terry Gahagan, who is not the dad of Zach Gahagan.
I was about to say,
but I think he may be a cousin because they're from that area. Zach Gahagan's dad's name is Mike. But I'm wondering if Mike's got a brother named Terry, because that's too much. There's not many Gahagans who play baseball in the western part of North Carolina. But I thought that was cool. The NCAA had told the UNC Asheville players they could not be in the movie, of course. But Terry Gahagan decided he was going to take a chance. And here he is getting talked about on the pod. So it paid off.
It all worked out for you, Terry.
Yep.
Good play, sir. I have a question. So we're really here right at the end of the movie. And Susan Sarandon is doing a voiceover. And she says something about her housekeeping duties fell short as always, and she's like sitting on the kitchen floor and it's filthy, and she picks up a cigarette off the floor and smokes. What was that about? I feel like that's one of those where maybe there had been a scene earlier in the movie that got cut that maybe would make that make more sense.
Was it because they had knocked everything off the table?
Right. in the
was
take
this
my breath
the next day
in the take my breath away scene. I thought maybe that was possible, but then I looked at, I mean, the floor was filthy. I mean, that looked like it was weeks of junk that had built up.
Well,
I don't know.
She had been otherwise committed.
So you see Nuke getting interviewed by some reporter, and he's in the meeting. He's looking all fancy, and he's hitting every cliche that Crash told him to say to the media earlier in the movie. And so, this Nuke has learned his lesson along the way, Adam.
I'm just happy to be here, and I hope I can help the ball club. You know, I just want to give it my best shot, and good Lord willing, things will work out. You know, you got to play them one day at a time, though. A good friend of mine used to say, this is a very simple game. You throw the ball, you catch the ball, you hit the ball. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, sometimes it rains. Think about that for a while.
The wrap-up, Annie is at a game, and it's just absolutely pouring. It was raining.
Yeah.
Even the Durham Bull mascot was bummed out and went and sat and took his head off in the dugout. That's mascot rule number one, sir. But you just failed. But so she walks home, and there were a couple times like this, Adam, that I thought was kind of cool where I was like, that's Durham. I mean, obviously, you know it's Durham, but there were some times that I thought there were some very recognizable. There's another time when she was walking on a street that I was like, man, I think that's the corner right by the new ballpark or something, or very close. I mean, there were just moments like that where I thought it was very recognizably Durham.
Yes.
And this was one of those where she was walking back to the house, and you see Kevin Costner is there waiting for her. Basically, he decided, broke the record, and hung it up. I thought it was weird that he decided to break the record. I guess it just kind of showed you how much he loved and respected the game, and that he, as dubious as he thought it might be, would be honored to have a record. Do you think that's it?
He just couldn't quit this game.
Yeah. So he quit, broke the record, and has made it known that he basically just wants to now be with her, maybe even become a manager in the minor leagues. She gets oddly emotional about it.
Think I could make it to the show as a manager?
You've been great. You've been great.
She starts, which is a theme throughout the movie. We haven't really talked about her much, but she, throughout the entire movie, is almost obnoxiously over the top and like spiritual about all of her conversation about the game. But very early in the movie, they make it known that she's not a spiritual person, like in a religious way, but only that way about baseball and life, I guess. Does that sentence make sense, Adam?
By itself, it doesn't, but in the context of the movie, yes.
Yeah.
You understand about nonlinear thinking, and I mean, just baseball seems like a linear game with all those lines in the box scores and all, but the fact is, it's a spacious non-time kind of time.
Annie.
To it. What?
I got a lot of time to hear your theories, and I want to hear every damn one of them, but now I'm tired, and I don't want to think about baseball, and I don't want to think about quantum physics, and I don't want to think about nothing. I just want to be.
The managerial job he's talking about taking is in Georgia, isn't it? Visalia? That's in Georgia.
I think so.
Well, she doesn't live in Georgia. She lives in Durham. I guess we're supposed to believe she's going to go with him? And also, would you want her around a whole new team? I don't think you would. I don't think you'd be comfortable with that.
Adam, then they begin to dance, which I guess we should have brought up at the very beginning of the movie in the bar scene where Nuke and Crash have a little bit of a fight, and we talked about Paula Abdul. She asks him to dance, he being Crash. Crash says he doesn't dance. Then you cut to Nuke dancing, and so you just kind of see the difference between the two of them. But then this final scene or shot of the movie is them dancing together, just kind of goofily dancing, having a good time. Boom, Bull Durham.
Yeah. Couple other notes. This really bothered me. There's a sign at the Durham Athletic Park that says players' wives.
Yeah. Oh, keep going.
And it's P-L-A-Y-E-R apostrophe S. How many does he have?
Well, this is an extraordinarily common mistake, I think. I think a lot of people egregiously put the extra apostrophe. In fact, we had someone who was being very nice and made some personalized, like, return address stickers for us. And it says the Angels. But it says Angels apostrophe S. So I almost don't... I either, A, don't use them, or if I do, Adam, I literally get a marker and black out the apostrophe. Like, it's not... We don't need that. We're not saying it belongs to us.
Right.
We're saying that we are the multiple people who make up the Angels.
Well, and they clearly made that sign for the movie. Not one person thought, guys, I'm not sure this is right.
Yeah. Now, look, you know Adam and I sometimes make pronunciation errors, mostly Adam. And you know that we have some things that stick in our crawl, like a part and a part for Adam. This is one that sticks in my crawl. The needless use of apostrophes when really you're just trying to pluralize something.
If it's going to be written right there on a giant movie screen, could we just
get it right?
Run it through a proofreader.
Or can you fix it in post-production? Maybe not in 1988.
CGI it out. Kevin Costner got the job by going to the batting cage with Ron Shelton.
Yeah.
At which... you know Kevin Costner thought he was a complete baller because he switch hit at the batting cage.
By the way, I did enjoy the scene when he and Annie are in the batting cage in the movie. That's when they're talking about, for the first time, his home run record. Two parts about that scene that I actually thought were really cool, where basically he's trying to get her to not be with Nuke and be with him, but she says she's monogamous basically during the season, and their faces are really close together, and the pitching machine keeps firing baseballs like perfectly in between them. I thought that was a really cool shot. And also in that same scene, Annie bats for a while, then Kevin Costner gets the bat, and his back is kind of to the pitching machine, and he's talking to her after she is then outside the cage. He's holding the bat with one hand, has his hand in his pocket, and just kind of spins and hits one perfectly with one hand. That was like, hey, Kevin Costner, you just reached a pretty cool level right there. I hope that was on one take.
Well, and he clearly is a believable baseball player.
Yes, is athletic enough to pull it off.
Susan Sarandon looks like a good hitter in that scene Jones is talking about. It turns out she was hitting tennis balls that were lobbed at her from 8 feet away.
Oh.
Which is kind of disappointing because she did look like a good hitter.
Yeah.
This is a consensus top three sports movie on most every list that you look at.
What are the others? Do you know?
Rocky. I mean,
Rocky, okay.
Major League's in there a lot. Hoosiers is in there a lot.
Yeah, Hoosiers, yeah.
Raging Bull, which I've never seen.
I've never seen that.
Those are the ones that come to mind.
Mm-hmm.
I would not have it in my top three, would you?
No. This is a very, very, very popular movie. I like this movie fine, but it is not like one of my favorite movies. But I think it's fine. I don't dislike it.
I would put Major League, Hoosiers, and Field of Dreams above it on the sports list easily, and I would probably put Rocky. I think I would put Creed up there.
Obviously, I've never seen Creed. You love Creed.
I do love Creed. So that's five right there. I was kind of let down. Like, I was looking forward to watching this one. When it won, I was excited because, I don't know if I had ever sat down and watched it. But I think, you know, part of what it is they would not make this movie today.
Well, okay, keep going.
Because it's an original story. It's not a comic book. It's not a sequel to something. There's not a lot of action. There's just a lot of talking.
Mm-hmm.
Ron Shelton got nominated for Best Original Screenplay, which he probably should. It's a great story, an original story. But you don't make this in 2020, I don't think, because they just don't make movies like this now. What's the last movie that was like this where a bunch of younger or middle-aged adults sit around and talk?
Right. Yeah, it's almost like the adult contemporary chart version of Major League.
Right.
And I've also seen Major League a lot more than this, but I like Major League more than this. I feel like Major League's a little bit, it's also a little bit more, I'm going to use the term cartoony, like it's a little bit more dialed up for the movies, you know what I mean?
Right.
And it has more... this movie is all around baseball, of course. But there isn't like the big payoff game where the good guys beat the bad guys. And I mean, that it isn't that. So it doesn't have that aspect of it. It is much more the... again, it's like Michael Bolton should be singing over top of this movie, because it's much more about Annie and Crash's journey to this realization that they've turned the corner a bit in life and they're on a different path than they used to be on, with baseball being the part that brings it all together.
It's hard not to compare it to Major League, because they're 1 year after the other.
Yeah, they're so... yes.
But I feel like Major League comes on TV all the time, and I think of Major League as being pretty raunchy. This movie never comes on TV, or at least I don't ever see it, and I think that's because you'd have a hard time getting it on TV.
Yeah, I think this would be a hard one to play on TNT or something.
To keep,
because
to keep
of the
story.
Yeah, because of the language, like we were saying. And the adult situations that are so prominent in this movie, even though there's no nudity in this movie, but it is very adult-oriented.
Well, and
I like my adult contemporary chart version. I think that's a good...
I think that's right.
I think that is what Kenny G and Michael Bolton.
Yeah. Well, and as we always have to say, I haven't seen Major League lately. Like in the last 5 years, I didn't sit down and say, I'm going to sit down and watch Major League.
Right.
Possible it might not play well today, but when I think of it, I just think of more hearty laughs than I do in Bull Durham. Although as we sat here and talked about it, there were three or four times I thought, oh yeah, that was funny.
Yeah.
But not like I couldn't get enough of it. Just a chuckle.
I do think there are very iconic scenes in both Major League and Bull.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, very iconic baseball stuff in both of them.
I think Major League is more iconic to baseball people.
Really?
And I think Bull Durham is more iconic to the world.
Yeah, that might be right. That might be right.
But I think that's both what they were going for.
All right, Adam. Time to roadhouse it, sir.
Four roadhouses from me.
Roadhouse, 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 roadhouse.
I am blown away by that ranking.
I think this feels old. I think it is extremely 80s.
Really?
Yes.
Man, I was going to go much lower than that, because I think, okay, this is how I tend to try and grade the Roadhouse Challenge. And look, Adam, we're all individuals. We can do it the way we want. Does it represent what we used to say was simply 80s, but I think now it's a little bit more of the time frame.
Right.
And again, I thought it felt a little older than the time frame, if that makes sense. Like the music, all of it.
Right.
And I guess that was, I mean, like even the bus they were riding when they went on the 12-game road trip, to me, I was like, man, is that really a 1988 bus? I guess it was. There's that, the comedy level of it, especially if there's some comedy when you're not trying to be funny. I think that always helps a Roadhouse grade sometimes. And just the quality of the movie, I think, at least plays in a little bit. Man, you put a 4 on this thing?
I think the depiction of baseball is old. I think the people seem old. Durham Athletic Park looks old. Everything about this, to me, says this was the mid-80s.
All right. I'm going 2.5.
Roadhouse, roadhouse, road.
Which is the exact same that I gave Dirty Dancing, but I feel okay about that. 2.5.
Okay.
This was a confounding, this was a hard one to grade. I agree with that. It was hard. I think the last several have been hard to grade.
Yeah. Yes, because none of them have been going just straight. I'm going.
Rocky IV was the easiest, because it was 80s. It was ridiculous, but a movie I thoroughly enjoyed as well.
Right.
But since then, they've all had different challenges. Dirty Dancing, Varsity Blues, and now here at Bull Durham. All different challenges. I can't even remember. Karate Kid may have been after Rocky IV. That one wasn't hard to grade.
I'm glad I saw this.
Yes,
and now I can say I did. Will I be watching it on a future Saturday night? Probably not.
All right, so we hope you've enjoyed it. Nice little summer. It's a good movie to do in the summer sports time period.
Yeah, no baseball right now, so we've got Kevin Costner baseball.
Okay.
I like The Rookie, by the way. That's not Kevin Costner, but that's another sport.
Is that the one where the Which one's that?
Is where
that?
Dennis Quaid is an old
guy. Oh, yeah. No, that's a good one.
And he's out there and he uses the highway thing as the radar detector.
Yep. That one's good. I was thinking Rookie of the Year where the guy broke his shoulder and then could throw like a billion miles an hour.
That one was on over a recent weekend. It was on ESPN. Henry Rowan Gartner, I think is his name.
All right. So Adam and I will be back with some more regular pods here coming soon. Obviously, we're right in the doldrums of the summertime right now. So we'll be climbing back out of that soon. We have some good guests that we have built up. Another standalone Roadhouse Challenge, Adam. We're going to revisit, see if we like doing it this way. I think it's fine.
I think it's fine, especially for the summer.
Right now. Yeah. Right now. Okay, for now, we're going to let Kevin Costner... No, I'm joking.
Susan Sarandon, I know I've talked a little ugly about you in this show, but you come on in, and now it's your time.
No, we'll let Katrina, of course, and the RZA get us out of here on the latest edition of the Carolina Insider.
See you later, Big Grit.
When I was small, we had nothing at all.
Box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meal served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all.
See you later, Big Grit.
The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Tar Heel Sports Network.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.